Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
What form is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
The last thing a golfer wants when they're closing in on a tournament victory is for all the bad shots they've hit at that tournament over the years to start creeping into their consciousness. That's exactly the headspace Shane Lowry found himself in yesterday. But to be honest, he could have fooled us as he kept his composure, played what he describes as one of the best shots he's ever hit on the 18th hole, and two-putted for the birdie that sealed victory, albeit only after Rory McIlroy put his mate through the ringer for a few minutes. Welcome to Monday Second Captain's Podcast. Hi, guys.
Hey, Owen, how are you?
Hey, Owen, how's it going?
Fantastic win for Shane Lowry yesterday. His first since the British Open in 2019. Not one single bogey over the 54 holes of the shortened BMW Championship at Wentworth. And still, he had to go through nervous wreck mode in the scoring tent, watching McIlroy come up the 18th, give himself an eagle chance, miss the putt by inches. A putt that would have sent the two of them into a playoff. Yeah, 1 inch, really. I mean, it just sort of stopped.
You say inches, it was just 1 inch, yeah.
Watching Lowry, watching McIlroy was quite enjoyable, I got to say. Yeah, and either way, I'm thinking, this can't end badly. It's McIlroy and Lowry, you know. If this goes to a playoff, that's going to be a lot of fun as well. But I'm sure I'm not the only one who was happy to see Lowry win this. He knows how to pick him, does Shane Lowry. When he does win, it tends to be pretty big. The British Open, World Golf Championship, now the flagship event of the European Tour. I think there's a lot of golfers out there with, say, 8, 9, 10, 12 tournament victories who might never have won any as prestigious as the ones that Lowry picked up, which is something we can get into.
I think those guys would probably swap careers with Lowry, to be honest, given the status of a few of those wins. All right, his own home Open to start with, and Open as well. So, I mean... and he'd been close even a couple of times this year. So to see him getting over the line, I mean, the emotion in the scorer's tent was probably understandable, given how the year had gone and how even yesterday afternoon had gone, because he had played so bloody brilliantly. And to be forced into a playoff with a guy like Rory McIlroy, that would have been nervy, I think.
Well, speaking of emotion, there was an interesting answer by Lowry to this question in his post-round interview on Sky.
Winning is always an emotional experience. We can see that from your reaction. Were the circumstances this tournament was played in, did they heighten those emotions?
I think so, yeah. I think so. You know, I made no secrets as to how I feel about the whole thing at the start of the week. And I wanted to go out and win this tournament for myself, first and foremost. But I think for this tour and, you know, everyone that has stayed loyal to this tour and everyone that's done everything for this tour, I really feel like, you know, this is one for the good guys.
It certainly was one for the good guys. Congratulations. Thanks. Shane, well played.
Thank you.
I didn't pick this up at the time, but just listening back to it, I'm not sure that Lowry actually answered the question that was asked. I assume what the interviewer meant by it being emotional and the circumstances around the tournament was, you know, the Queen and everything.
Yeah.
But in fairness, Lowry did also answer a question directly about all that. So he just, he's like, listen, I'm taking this ball and I'm hopping it against the heads of the LIV golfers. Mm. A win for the good guys, which is a little bit, oh, it's a bit much, isn't it? Is it?
Yeah.
It's a little simplistic. Like Shane Lowry played, it's this thing of goodies and baddies. You know, Shane Lowry's played in Saudi Arabia himself in the past. So I don't know. There are, maybe you should be aware there are some grey areas here. Like, even though in how he interacts with the LIV golfers, I saw him say before the tournament, there are certain lads I'd shake hands with and certain lads I wouldn't. So Lowry himself is making allowances there for there being grey areas within how humans interact with each other. It just seems a little bit of a simplistic analysis the way he framed. I know some people loved it. Some people loved this. Just, yeah, stick it to the LIV golfers. It's as simple as that. Mm. I think it's a bit more nuanced myself.
Yeah, well, I mean, it came down, I think, to the commitment or otherwise shown to the European Tour over the last 15 or 20 years. So basically he's saying, I mean, John Rahm went into it in quite a bit of detail on Wednesday. I mean, he didn't necessarily, he didn't name the players that he was really upset with, but he did kind of say, okay, there's like Sergio, Westwood, Poulter, those guys, fine. Patrick Reed came over, has played a couple of European Tour events in the past. He's also pretty much fine. But then the interview I saw from Wednesday with the Sky reporter, he just like started shouting out names like Taylor Gooch, Abraham Anser. And Ram was like, I'm not going to name any players, but basically, yes, you know exactly who I'm talking about. These guys are only here for world ranking points because they can't get world ranking points in any other tournament. So, yes, they're basically exactly the guys that I have a problem with. So, yeah, it was like, so the Queen died in the middle of all this. But like even Tuesday and Wednesday of last week, Ram, Lowry, McIlroy all doing kind of snooty press conferences saying, these guys shouldn't be here. If I was in there, I think it was Lowry that said, if I was in their shoes, I wouldn't show up here. I wouldn't have the gumption to show up here, basically. But that's what they've done. So, you know, we have to live with it. So it was a reasonably dramatic week before the Queen died in the middle of it and reduced it from a 72-hole competition to a far more manageable, for the veterans of the LIV Golf Tour, 54 holes. 54
manageable, and yet they still couldn't pull it off, Murph. You're also stealing a Rory McIlroy gag there.
Well, a gag that weirdly came back to bite him on the arse a little bit, given that it was a 54-hole tournament in the end. But yeah,
we're going to chat to Malachy Clerken about all that and about Rory, about McIlroy himself, actually, as well as just Lowry. McIlroy reveling in his role at the forefront of this battle that's going on in golf at the moment. How are you doing today, Kenny? Get any sleep over the weekend?
Not very well. I didn't sleep well at all, actually.
Well, I thought so.
Surprised you. Why?
Well, you had Garth Brooks bloody singing into your, practically into your bedroom window for the last couple of days.
He's over.
You're a Croke Park resident.
He's over around 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't usually be going to bed before then anyway, to be honest.
Not even on a Sunday night before a hefty week's work, no?
Puts on a hell of a show.
And finishes nice and early as well. That's the sign of any true rock star for you, Ken, isn't he? Puts on a hell of a show, finished by 9:30.
No, it sounded like everyone was having a whale of a time at Garth Brooks, so I was pleased for them.
I spent a little bit of time in Houston Station on Saturday evening, and it was an unbelievable thing. I'll tell you one thing about it, right? It was a cross-generational event, which always makes me feel good. There were large groups of people, mothers and daughters, granddaughters.
My entire extended family seem to have gone to this one, and you know, some of them are dubs as well. It's not just the Culchies. I know Malachy himself wrote about how many people from Monaghan were in particular were attending this 60,000 one.
60,000 population. Quite a few generations of them had bought tickets. Apparently,
18,000 out of 60,000.
Yeah, bought tickets. That's according to Aiken Promotions. But
why is he so big in Monaghan?
There's a short answer to that. Then there's like a college thesis on that.
No, really, seriously. Well, what's the short answer at least?
Country and Western music is really, really big in the north of Ireland, Ken. Big. I'm absolutely not looking down. I thought it was beautiful to see large family groups heading off, each one more excited than the last. And fair play on, fair play and good
You're
sport.
Deeply corny man, aren't you?
Ah, listen, it tugs at the heartstrings, you know? I mean, what is it about Crow Park that just lets this happen, you know? It is, in many ways, Ken, the country's big house, isn't it?
It's like Ireland's HQ. Living room, really, isn't it?
Ireland's living room, where the generations come together in love and respect for each other.
We should probably crack on with this show fairly live. If you've got Champions League during the week, you've got to be looking at the Liverpool-Ajax game. Tomorrow night is the one to watch after what happened to Liverpool and Italy last week. We'll have football pods on Wednesday and Thursday for World Service members only. US Murph is also back tomorrow with the NFL season up and running. So plenty there for your fiver a month plus VAT. SecondCaptains.com is the place to sign up.
There's a winning mentality. I see it in their eyes. They've got glazed eyes. What I said to him at the end, and I'm not ashamed to say it, I said, are you ready to win a World Cup? Because we're in it to win it.
They've got to trust me, I'm taking these guys into battle. Yeah. And I'm doing my own stapling.
Look, we're not getting carried away, but we're now getting to that point now where we are inspiring.
Does a struggling salesman start turning up on a bicycle? He turns up in a newer car, Perception.
So what becomes of you, my love?
Along the way, we're going to have fun.
When they have finally stripped you off,
I try and laugh several times a day.
The handbags and the glad rags, as your granddad has to sweat so you could buy.
A sergeant major spends all his time training his men to be killers
and make sure that they arrive for meetings on time and dressed in the right way.
He doesn't polish his own boots. The bosses are panicking. They're going, oh, cut back.
Non-negotiable. The way we play football is non-negotiable.
Watching Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy duke it out for one of golf's more prestigious championships was not a bad way to spend a Sunday afternoon. Malachy Clerkin, how are you?
Deadly.
Am I greedy for wanting that McIlroy eagle putt to drop on 18th? I was just getting used to the McIlroy versus Lowry dynamic, and I wanted a playoff personally. I wanted a playoff that Lowry was going to win because, you know, as he said himself, McIlroy's won enough. But I still wanted that damn playoff.
I think absolutely everybody wanted that damn playoff except Shane Lowry. I think I saw he said himself afterwards that he didn't fancy playing against McIlroy in a playoff because he was... It was a funny round of golf, actually, because, like, Lowry, I don't think, could have played any better. Like, he was just note perfect all the way around. Even the time he went into the trees on 17, he was fine. He got out and extricated himself. But I felt McIlroy didn't really play that well. No. Like he seemed to be fighting himself all the way around. He seemed to be chuntering away to himself after every shot. And like even for, you know, shots that finished sort of 25 feet from the hole kind of thing. You're going, it's not that bad, Rory. But he just seemed to be out of sorts with himself the whole way around.
His terrible shots were a lot closer than that. I mean, if that was him playing at his worst, a lot of pro golfers would very much appreciate Rory McIlroy's absolute worst stuff. His body language was hilarious.
The absolute garbage he played to almost win the biggest event outside one of the majors of the European Tour. Yeah, so it was fantastic. Like it's like we're very lucky in a way to be into golf at all and into Irish golf. Certainly at the minute, these two are. Like they're a really top drawer. Like that leaderboard yesterday was a phenomenal leaderboard. And for Lowry to finish on top of it, like I think we should say it's about time. Like that was his first tournament win since he won the Open, which is three years and two months ago. Like for a player as good as he is, you know, he's not We sort of treat him as this great underdog a bit, but like, look at the tournaments he wins. He wins the British Open. He wins the Bridgestone. He's now won at Wentworth. Like, he came third in the Masters this year. He sort of threw away two tournaments on the PGA Tour earlier in the summer. And they were the sort of, like, they were bad mistakes. Now, one of them, the Honda Classic, a biblical rainstorm came down as he was standing on the 18th tee. It wasn't great luck, but at the same time, he was the best golfer that week and should have won. And he made a bit of a Balls of the Heritage, I think, the one in South Carolina. I'll say May-ish. Anyway, it was like 3 or 4 weeks after the Masters. It was the week after the Masters. And he, you know, he was sort of leading at the turn, but had a double bogey, sort of chipped into the water at one stage. And you're kind of going, he should be closing those tournaments out. And if he hadn't won yesterday, after going, like, if he had gone as he did through the whole week without a bogey and still not won, that wouldn't really be good enough, you know. So it's great that he won. It's great that he closed it out and showed, you know, he isn't an elite international performer, and winning these sort of tournaments is what he should be at.
Yeah, I was going to mention the Honda Classic Tea, actually, because that, you know, you can really get into your head when, I mean, it was bad luck, but it's also like, it's the, you know, it's a rain shower. It's yeah. not, you know, yeah. it's
You're
not
from
like,
Offaly.
Yeah, you know, like, that is kind of it. You know,
I don't remember the weather being amazing the day he won the Irish Open.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, like obviously there, you know, there, you can put caveats on that, you know, it was Seb Straka, wasn't it, that you know, had like absolutely fine conditions going down the 18th, and then by the time Lowry reached it was a biblical downpour. But, you know, watching that, you were inclined to be thinking, God, Shane, like, you have to get over the line in one of these big tournaments. Like, you know, it's that clock from the British Open, from the moment he won the British Open, that clock has been running, and you kind of want to put a stop to that. So that was kind of why yesterday was such a big deal, I think.
Yeah, and look, there's almost nothing in sport that's harder than winning a golf tournament. Like, there's almost nothing where the margins are so minuscule. Like, you look at McIlroy's putt on the last yesterday, like, you talk about small margins. Like, I changed my mind 5 times as that putt was coming down the hill as to whether it was going in or not. And I was wrong all the time. Like, I thought it was going in, and I thought, oh, this is no chance. And I kind of looked away from the TV, and then it kept rolling and rolling and rolling. I thought, oh my God, he's just this absolutely perfectly. And then it turned away at the last and it sat on the side of the hole. So, like, that's literally an inch. Literally an inch of real estate. And that's the difference between him going down down a playoff, and it's the difference between Shane Lowry clearing out a 3.5 year streak without a win and actually winning. You know, and we assign so much, I don't know, we assign so much weight to things that really come down to, you know, the width of a golf ball. And it's the reason, you know, I wrote a column last week actually about McIlroy, about how I think he's the most underrated person in Irish sport, because I think he takes an awful lot of shit for only winning 2 tournaments a year, you know. And winning 2 tournaments is incredibly difficult, you know. And the same with Lowry, you know, you got to, you know, obviously, if you keep playing well enough, if you keep putting yourself up there, you will eventually come out. That's how you make sure you come out on the right side of enough of these to have a world-class career. But the margins are so, so tiny, and winning is so, so difficult.
I want to come back to that McIlroy point you're making there, but just on Lowry, I think I understand the argument that he should have won an event between the British Open and now. Certainly he has the talent to do that, and he's good enough to do that, and maybe we do need to raise our expectations. But I do love the tournaments that he picks off. He doesn't win that regularly, and yet almost all of his wins are these, just, I was about to say majors, obviously only one major, but they're all really important events and really memorable. The Irish Open as an amateur, a World Golf Championship event, the British Open, the World Tour's flagship event yesterday. He certainly knows which ones to win, Mal.
Big time, big time. And it's a fantastic, like, that is the thing about him. You do look, like, if you watch enough golf, you sort of tend to understand players' personalities. You kind of know who various people are. And, like, as with everything, you are who you are until you change who you are. Like, Tony Finau had this real reputation for coming so close over years and years and years of golf without winning anything. And then in one sort of streak about 2 months ago, he picked off, I think it was two tournaments and nearly won a third in a row. Like, he was the best golfer in the world for a 3 week period, and nobody now can ever talk about him having trouble winning or anything like that. That's just gone. Lowry's, the way you look at Lowry is if he's up there on a Sunday, well, he's not going to die wondering. You know, he's going to go absolutely go balls out for it. He's not going to be trying to cash a check. None of that matters to him. He has that mentality that, right, come on, let's go and win this. And he has a great, like, he's great to watch in full flow. Like, I love the golf he plays. Mm. You know, it's so natural. You can see, like, he shapes shots to fit each shape of hole and all of this. And you can, they all do that, of course, to a certain extent, but some of them are more formulaic than others. Some of them just, you know, are huge drivers of the ball and then really, really delicate with their short irons. Whereas Larry just kind of moves the ball around the course, and he's a shaper of the ball, and it's really gorgeous to watch. And he plays quick. He doesn't stand faffing about. He's not, you know, it's not a trial to sit and watch him play like it is with some players who are faffing over yardages and all that sort of crack. He just gets on with it, and he's great. He's brilliant to watch, and I love, like, you want players like that to be the ones that rise to the top, because they're, it's very watchable TV, you know, and, you know, he curses away and all that sort of stuff. Like, he must, I'd say he's close to the player that Sky Sports have offered most apologies for down the years.
I'd like to see the guy who beat him on that score.
Exactly. Yeah. But he's that kind of cursing that your granny would love, you know, because he's just nobody holds it against him. Ah, shite, that's fucking shite shin, you know, and he's always angry at himself and at the caddy or whatever. So it's good. Like, it's, as I said, you know, it was time to win, and I'm delighted he did.
And of course, his win was a victory for the good guys, in his own word. Mal, what did you make of that?
Yeah, like, it's funny. It's such a wild time to be following golf. And to be following, if you're even 2% interested in the politics of it all, it is a really interesting time to be watching it. Like, the best shot of the final round yesterday was Taylor Gooch hit an amazing shot into the final green for a tap-in eagle. Like, I think there was about 7 or 8 eagles all day, but, like, his was literally to a foot. And it was a monumental shot. And it moved him into a tie for third. But because he's one of the live guys, like, there was no big, you know, the way when somebody hits an amazing golf shot, they show repeats of it all the time. And there's, let's go back and watch that from the overhead angle and all that sort of stuff. Like, this literally moved him into a tie with McIlroy at the time. Now, McIlroy went on to birdie and move into second. But, like, he was tied with Rory McIlroy after hitting this monumental shot. And there was, oh, that's a great shot, let's move on. And because he's one of the live guys. And, like, at the early part of yesterday, Patrick Reed had obviously jumped to the front of the leaderboard. And, like, all you could see was everybody kind of going, Jesus, we can't have one of the live guys winning this bloody tournament. And so when John Rahm holed his eagle putt on the last year, everybody was delighted. Ah, that's it. Stick it to them. Go on, Rambo. Hopefully he's one of the good guys too. And it's so funny for anybody. Like, I've been watching golf my whole life, or I've been playing golf my whole life. And golf is the sport where nobody falls out with each other. Like, it's so annoyingly genteel and, you know, kind of performatively gentlemanly. And now there's just kind of open warfare between the two various factions. And it's on one level, it's quite hilarious to watch, because, like, there's nobody less threatening than a crowd of golfers. But at the same time, they all kind of bitch away at each other a wee bit. And, like, McIlroy kind of sneering at the start of the week that, you know, it's going to be hard for these lads to play 72 holes because they're not used to it, because over at Live, they only play 54. Now, in the end, they ended up playing 54 because of the Queen. So it all, and like somebody like Billy Horschel, like really kind of going after them. Like there was a huge controversy, basically, with Sergio Pull. Now, Sergio Pull played shite in his first round, pulled out, and went back to Texas. I think his father's some owner of some, or is big into college football over in America, and was back over there at an American football game on Saturday at a college game. But the very fact that he played in the first round kept a Spanish golfer who's right on the bubble of keeping his card. It kept him, he was first reserve in the tournament. It kept him out of the tournament. If that guy had been in the tournament and made the cut, he'd have guaranteed his card for another year. And Sergio just came, played, had a 76 in the first round, then just pissed off. Like, he wasn't sick, he wasn't injured, he wasn't anything. He just said, ah, can't be bothered playing the rest of this. And so, like, those war really, now, what passes for war in golf, but really bitchy golfy commentary all over Twitter on Saturday night about what a dick Sergio was for doing this. And it's really fascinating to watch, like, golf people really go for each other. And it's ongoing. That's the thing. Like, it's gonna be ongoing for the next 3-4 years until they sort it all out.
I gotta say though, Malachy, this idea of the good guys and the bad guys.
Yes.
In Lowry's words, it sounds like something my 3-year-old son would say when watching a cartoon. And I would try to, you know, I would try to make the point that, well, you know, it's not as simple as that. Maybe just sometimes people make bad decisions and all this sort of stuff. I just, you know, in one way, I admire that Lowry is able to keep that childlike clarity on how the world works. And it's just good people and bad people. Particularly in the context of the tour that he's just won the flagship event of, which is run by DP World, or sponsored by DP World, owned by the Dubai royal family. You wrote about this a few months ago. This DP World owned P&O, and we all know what happened there with the staff being sacked and kicked off the ferry, sacked over Microsoft Teams. Just last month, in fact, they announced, DP World announced, first half profits had risen more than 50% to a record $721 million. Again, DP World owned by the Dubai royal family. So there are grey areas here, Shane. I don't think it's as simple as good guys and bad guys.
Oh, and there's even greyer areas, Owen. Like, you know, like Shane went and played in the Saudi International.
Yeah.
The first 3 years it was on, you know, and absolutely didn't have to, you know, it didn't make any real difference to his life, you know. Fair enough. I'm not sure whether he got an appearance fee or not, but I know that McIlroy turned down $2.5 million of an appearance fee to play in it, and said he just didn't want, you know, there was a moral side of playing in the Saudi International. Shane was happy enough to play in it for 3 years, and, you know, that side of it. I do think it's interesting though. Golf has kind of moved on from the Saudi stuff. All the talk really about good guys and bad guys, I don't think he was really talking about, you know, we're the good guys because we're not funded by the Saudis. Golf has sort of moved on to we're the good guys because we're the PGA Tour.
Yes, the parameters have narrowed massively here. Yeah, I think his definition of good seems to basically mean people who stay loyal to this golf tour as opposed to the golf tour.
And I think actually what golfers are now talking about, as you're saying, like the human rights thing is now gone. What they're talking about is competitive fairness, which is that like you if like Ram's buddy who was the first alternate. Whose place was taken by Sergio, let's say, if Sergio hadn't played, then that guy, on the basis purely of his golfing ability, would win his tour card next year. And Liv exists outside of that hierarchy of the world ranking points, the DP World Tour ranking points, PGA Tour ranking points. It exists outside of that, and that's basically what golfers like Shane Lowry are now rebelling against, this idea that you can just rock up and get paid millions of dollars regardless of whether you win or lose.
Yeah, and that's it. Like, it has the star, like if you can imagine it, like it sort of feels like about 3 years ago that Graham McDowell was sitting on at a press conference trying, you know, manfully batting away for, you know, the Saudis and how golf was a force for good in the world and all of that sort of stuff. Whereas nobody asks about that anymore. Nobody really cares about that anymore. The conversation now, like, LIV Golf is still a huge, huge issue, probably the number one issue in golf. But it's all about golf politics now. It's not about geopolitics anymore, if it ever was. But, like, it has totally moved away from all of that stuff. Meanwhile, look, we all know that the Saudi human rights abuses are happening at a pace. You know, I wrote a couple of weeks ago about the lady that got jailed for 34 years for her tweets, and while she was a student in Leeds University, and as soon as she arrived back in Saudi, she was put in jail for tweeting support for dissidents in Saudi, and that has just totally disappeared from the landscape in golf over the last couple of months. And as I say, you would think that the Graham McDowell thing was 3 years ago. It's 12 weeks ago. Literally, it's 3 months ago that first tournament outside London was there. And while Lee Westwood and Dustin Johnson were very happily just kind of playing dumb and going, yeah, I don't know, I'm just a golfer, poor Graham was sort of trying to talk his way out of a hole and just kept talking himself into a deeper,
there was a good
deeper,
line
deeper
now.
One.
Yeah, Paul Kimmage was at the golf this weekend. He cornered McDowell, and McDowell said, "It feels like I'm Lance Armstrong in this scenario here." But Kimmage says, "I wanted to send you a text when you were doing all those, you know, we were talking. I wanted to send you a text to say shut the fuck up." And McDowell says, "You should have." So, you know, McDowell is there, but McDowell is very much live golf, and he's been talked about quite a lot. I do just find that this whole dynamic really interesting, that it's not about the human rights don't matter in this argument anymore. It's just about which tour is better, essentially, and which is a more pure form of the game of golf. It makes me a bit less, you know, ecstatic about jumping on board the DP World Tour bandwagon and saying, you know, this is the only way for the future of golf.
100%. And, you know, when it all washes out and when they start playing on the PGA Tour, like, it goes into sort of hiatus now for a bit, when they come out next year and people sort of re-tune in to golf, which is sort of when the tournament's in Hawaii, sort of late January or whatever. Like, the PGA Tour has instituted huge changes to its schedule for next year and to its payment structure and to the amount of money that the big players will get and to the amount of times that the big players all play in the same tournament and all of that sort of stuff as a reaction to LIV Golf. But I do wonder if we're sitting there sort of in 6 months' time or whatever, like, let's say mid-February, sort of just before, about 2 months before the Masters, going, really, this is it? This is what winning looks like for the PGA Tour, if indeed it is winning? Like, this is all that happened with that LIV Golf changed. It just made, you know, the best players in the world a lot richer and got them playing together in tournaments more often. Like, that's what all the fuss was about, really. And it just seems that the original sort of, you know, exactly as you say, Owen, that the original controversy or the original sort of row about where this money was coming from, how moral or otherwise it is to be stooges for this autocratic regime, that's just not a factor in any conversation that you hear around golf anymore. It just isn't spoken about. It doesn't come up. And it's all about the really dull, boring stuff of, you know, multimillionaire golfers arguing with each other over who gets to play for more money.
McIlroy's status in all this is interesting, isn't it? As the savior of golf, basically. For someone who says he'd do anything in his power to avoid confrontation, he seems to be reveling in this. He's playing some pretty good stuff.
He has been, you know, like, Scotty Shelfer was voted PGA Player of the Year there last weekend, and rightly so. You know, he won the Masters, and I think he won four tournaments or maybe five tournaments. But since the Masters, McIlroy has been the best golfer in the world. I think that's fairly reasonable to say. Like, that was his 11th top 10 finish this year. Like, 11 top 10s in a season is ludicrous. I think Patrick Cantlay had 12, and he's the only one ahead of him. So his golf has been, you know, kind of beyond reproach. And it is really fascinating that he sort of took it upon himself to be the sort of front and center guy all the way through. Like, when you look around, like, Justin Thomas could have done it, or Spieth could have done it, or a few others, or John Rahm, any of these guys could have, but he's sort of kind of puffed his chest out and did it. And yeah, it is really interesting that not only did his golf not suffer through it, it thrived. And that's, he's after having one of his best seasons in quite a while. And I'm not sure I ever really bought the thing about would he do anything to avoid confrontation. Like he has never shied from things in his whole life. Like, he is prevaricated with stuff. Like, the Olympic stuff way back in the day, he kind of talked around the houses on it and tried to find the right formulation of words and tried to find the right thing to feel about it or the right thing to say about it. But he never shied from it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he and that's the thing with McIlroy, is he'll always give an opinion. He's prepared to be wrong, you know. I don't know that he's prepared to be wrong. He's prepared to go back afterwards and say he was wrong, even though he would always sort of feel he was right at the time. And it is really interesting to see how he was the sort of the figurehead right the way through. And, like, I guess to a certain extent he should be, you know. He's one of the best golfers in the world. He's one of the most experienced players on tour, which is hilarious to think of him at this stage now, but he's whatever he is. He's 32, 33. He's been, he won his first tournament in 2010. So, like, he's been winning golf tournaments worldwide for 12 years, 13 years. I find him such a fascinating chap, you know, because he's so very obviously intelligent. He's a serious emotional intelligence to him. But he's a fairly ruthless businessman too, you know. Like, on some level, it's all, you kind of look at him and go, well, it's grand for you, Rory, to be saying I wouldn't go and play for the Saudi millions. You know, you're going to be fine one way or the other. But then the flip side of that is that he is going to be fine one way or the other. So he has no compunction to go and try and make the PGA Tour better or more lucrative for all the players who aren't going to be fine or wouldn't be fine. You know, so you have, I think it's very, very admirable the way he's conducted himself over the last 3-4 months on the course and off it.
So why do you think he doesn't get his due then? That piece you referenced that you wrote recently, you described him as probably the most underrated figure in Irish sport. Why is that?
I've wondered this for years. I think definitely a part of it is that he's Northern Irish.
Yeah.
And there's no getting away from that. Northern Irish sports people just aren't as beloved across the country for whatever reason.
People might throw George Best at you.
Yeah, but, like, at the same time, like, we're too young, but was George Best as, like, was he loved because he was Northern Irish, or was he loved because he played for Man United? Like, you know, the Northern Irish thing there is, look, all
I don't
these
think many people
are complicated.
Think of George Best as Irish.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's a massive amount of people who, you know, I
don't know how many people do, but, you know, this is what I'm trying to get at. It's say we're doing our good wall. George Best would be the one Northern Ireland. Well, Dennis Taylor has actually gotten up there sure, occasionally, yeah, but yeah. I think George Best is the one that sort of tends to have gone up a good few times over the years.
Yeah, I would say, though, Owen, in a situation like that, it's like, well, I suppose George Best comes into the argument if you're forced to think about it in that way. Mm-hmm. But if you mention George Best to people, no one immediately... Like, we don't clasp George Best to our bosom in the normal run of events at all, unless you're a Man United fan. You know, like it's just when you're forced into thinking about who is the greatest Irish sports person of all time, then George Best comes into it, because, well, I suppose George Best is Irish, isn't he? But I do think that's like, that is the default reaction of most people, and whether that's right or wrong.
So do you think that's the thing with McElroy then? Because there's this other idea over the years, it's gained traction that his personality is a bit drier. As Mal says in his piece, I just can't warm to him. I've never fully got that, because I do think he's quite an interesting sports person. Do you think it's mostly the Northern Irish thing, maybe compounded by his difficulty in deciding whether or not he wanted to represent Ireland in the Olympics?
I think there's a bit that all goes into it. I think people find him, you know, that personality that he has, you know, that, you know, he's never ticked the don't know box on a survey. You know, he has an opinion. One way, for right or for wrong, he will take, you'll ask him a question and he will have an opinion on it. And he, because of that, he does go back on his opinions. Like, you'd lose count of the times over the years where he was on one side of the fence on some issue, and then 6 months later, he kind of resiles from it. Like, playing golf with Trump was the sort of the classic version of that, that he kind of went and played golf with Trump, got shit for it, and then, like, on a podcast sort of 18 months later with Lawrence Donegan, basically said, yeah, I would never do that again. And had the self-awareness to go, well, now that I'm given out about him, I presume that I'll never be asked to do it again. So it's easy for me to say that I would never do it again, but I would never do it again. And this was right in the depths of COVID and all of that sort of stuff, and how Trump was leading America through COVID. And there are all of those times that you can kind of go, yeah, but Rory, you did go and you did sort of legitimize the man by playing golf with him. And part of him would be kind of going, yeah, I just thought it'd be interesting, you know, like, to go and play with the American president. But, you know, at the same time, yeah, it was probably the wrong thing to do. And I think, on some level, aren't we all like that to a certain extent? Not that we'd all go and play golf with Trump, but we all kind of make mistakes. We all kind of do stupid things from time to time. And we don't all admit to it as readily and as easily as he does. And we don't all kind of, like, even going back to when he was a kid, like, he sneered at the Ryder Cup before he ever played. And he says, you know, the Ryder Cup's just an exhibition. Like, I'm not going to get too het up over it. And it was the total arrogance of a 19-year-old who was kind of going, yeah, you know, the Ryder Cup, whatever. And then he played in it. And, like, sure, Jesus, last year he was crying tears at the end of it,
yeah,
having played terribly for a couple of days and then played brilliantly on the Sunday. And it the Ryder Cup means an awful amount to him now. And it over the next year, when we see what shape the Ryder Cup takes, with, you know, defectors to live all over the place, like, you can see that it'll be something that he'll fight for as if it's the most important thing in the world. And I find that really interesting about him, because I don't think, and God knows we interact with, read about, watch an amount of sports personalities across loads of different sports all day, every day. That's what we do for a living. And so many of them are just so coy and so afraid to say anything or to show any side of their personality, for fear that it will impinge on their sport, or for fear that it will become a distraction or whatever. And McElroy doesn't do that. Like, McElroy has played some of the best golf of his career over the last sort of 12 months. He was the best player in the majors who didn't win a major this year, all of that sort of stuff. Meanwhile, being front and center in the biggest political upheaval that the sport has seen in like 50 years. And I don't understand people who are into sport who don't warm to that. You know, I'm not saying that you have to like them, anybody. Of course, everybody's free to like or dislike whoever they want. But I don't really get that. I don't really get how you couldn't be compelled by the guy.
Hopefully he'll win another couple of majors next year, and that'll get us thinking about him in a new light, potentially. Just mentioned Lawrence Donegan there. His son, Niall, is playing a tournament today, a qualifying event for the opening event of the new PGA Tour season, and has a day off school because of that, which I think is legitimate enough. He's absolutely shit hot, this guy. US Murph keeps telling us about him. Good luck to Niall Donegan there today. Niall Shields Donegan there. today. You guys, Murph and Mal, will be back next week. There's a movie club penciled in, so I'm looking forward to that one. Very special event, a very special edition, I should say, of the Murph and Mal movie club. In the meantime, Malachy, brilliant as always. Thanks a mil.
Cheers, guys.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's a beautiful summer's day. The breeze is stupendous.
Stupendous.
Would this podcast be even more stupendous without ads?
Without ads?
Ads. If so, then join us for daily commercial-free shows at secondcaptains.com for just €5 a month.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not bumping them up. I'm not Irish. I'm just saying my observations, they are amazing.
Stupendous.
With the Premier League cancelled yesterday, the day was cleared for a few other sporting events to grab the attention. Normally at 25 past six on a Sunday, I'd be getting stuck into the Super Sunday post-match. But in football's absence, up stepped a fine footballer in his own right, Terry Kennedy, for the Ireland Sevens team, who won bronze at the World Cup in Cape Town. So their big result was beating South Africa in the quarterfinals. They then lost narrowly to New Zealand in the semis, but were up against Australia in the bronze. See, this is where third place playoffs are important, when there's a bronze medal up for grabs here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're in them. That's the other point, yeah. So the bronze medal match was yesterday, just before half six. Exciting game, nip and tuck all the way. Ireland trailed by a score late on. But that's when my man Terry Kennedy, I'm talking about Terry Kennedy, though, he's just emerged out of nowhere. Like, he's been there the entire way along this Sevens journey for the Irish. He's actually taking a year out next year, but signed off in style. He opened his box of tricks with a couple of minutes to go. Firstly, a beautiful little grubber kick that he collected himself for the equalising try. Then he sets up the winning score by, I'm not joking, volleying the ball to a teammate. Have you seen this?
And it was a serious piece of work, I have to say.
Oh, there's a loose pass, the ball's in the air, and rather than grabbing it in his hands and getting hit with a tackle, he sort of twists his body to the left, nudges it deftly to a teammate who puts Harry McNulty away for the winning try.
No, I'm telling you, Luka Modric would have been proud of this. It was a piece of absolute wizardry. And what an unbelievable result that is, by the way. A bronze medal in the Rugby Sevens World Cup is unbelievable going.
Kennedy finished as top try scorer in the World Series with 50 in 52 matches. He got onto the Dream Team, a selection that acknowledges the best seven players from all countries on the circuit. The bad news is he's taken a year out from Sevens. The even worse news is he better hope he's never coached by Joe Schmidt, who never forgave Simon Zeebo for that back-heeled.
was it the percentage play at that moment, though? You know?
Yeah,
Does Terry Kennedy weigh up the percentages? That would be the big question mark I have over the man.
I know, before anyone comes at me, I know that Joe Schmidt was not actually coaching Simon Zeebo when he did that back-heel to himself in Cardiff in 2013. But he did start a couple of months later in the Ireland job. And let's just say that Zeebo back-heel to himself was a move we saw a little bit less of when Schmidt became the Ireland coach. That's pretty much it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Owen.
Thank you, Owen. And thank you, Ken.
Thanks so much for listening. Now, why don't I take 30 seconds to wander over to secondcaptains.com and have a look at what's on offer on the World Service. If you become a member, no more ads on any of the podcast episodes. Second Captains Podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
What phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.